It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? Good, yeah. 51551 ray at rte.ie. Put on the kettle, sit down, relax. We're going to keep you company for the next hour and a half. Yeah, as Joe was saying, Jamie Vardy, his wife, Rebecca, will have to pay over $1 million. And we were just looking at his earnings, $140,000 a week with Leicester City. So how long would it take him to pay that off? And of course, he's been earning that for quite some time. So although it sounds a lot to you and me, it ain't a lot to the Vardys, I would imagine. But anyway, still, it's over $1 million. Here's the big news. It's not about Rebecca Vardy and what her husband earns. It's about the fact that creases are in. Ironing is out. This is big news. This is big news. So there's loads of catwalk shows going on in Paris at the moment. I think it's Fashion Week over there. And people have spotted a lot of creases. It was Prada, a brand that always sets the trends, that really ensured that this is a shift to take notice of. Throughout the collection, there were creases and wrinkles in clothes from short shift dresses and midi skirts to grey all-in-ones. And this is a quote from the man himself. He's co-designer, the boss man, Raf Simons, or Siemens, with Prada. And listen to this. He told the Observer that the creases were gestures of error. Gestures of error. Designed to replicate pieces that have had a life. So there you go. So if you're too lazy, or you just don't want to iron your shorts or your pair of jeans or your skirt or your blouse or whatever, you just say that, no, the crease, it's a gesture of error. Just goes to show that this piece has had a life. So there, you know nothing about fashion. I spotted, and I think I told you, that in the last Spider-Man, Tom Holland, when he wasn't in his Spider-Man suit, which has no creases in it because it's stretched all over his body, but he was wearing a creased jacket, creased shirt, and it was a fashion thing. It wasn't the fact that he didn't have time to iron it. And I spotted that at the time and thought, that must be a thing. That must be a thing. Well, it is a thing now. I like that. Because it's a pain in the behind, ironing. And I know people find it therapeutic. And people can do mindful ironing of a Sunday evening with a big pile of creased clothes on one side and then the lovely ironed ones on the other side as they watch their favourite soap or their favourite streaming service or whatever. But for me, it's just one of those things in life that I'd prefer not to have to do. But I do have to do it. But now the man from Prada says I don't. So great. Thank you very much, Mr. Prada person. Laughing, right? Laughing is great because it's funny. And if a laugh wasn't funny, it probably wouldn't be a laugh. But there are some laughs that are particularly funny. And there's a show in France called C'est mon choix, which translates as It's My Choice. And it's a daytime programme. And what they recently did was they gathered 8 people who had what they deemed to be the funniest laughs in France. They got them all together and they made them laugh. Yes, they did. And this is what it sounded like. Now, I've seen the video. They are genuine people with genuine laughter there. That's not feigned. That's not put on. That's people laughing. And to make it even funnier, and it won't work for radio, they got a visual representation of what each of them sounded like. So there was a car horn behind one person and then a pig behind another, then a goat and a whole host of other farmyard animals. There was definitely a donkey in there, an ass, whatever you're having yourself. Yeah, and it's called It's My Choice. And they have a sort of, I think they've just people, their mission statement is that they want to give a platform to people who leave no one indifferent. So people who provoke a reaction. But you see, laugh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have one of those laughs that you don't know I'm laughing until I'm finished. You know, a lot of people have that one. So it's that one, yeah. How was your laugh? Have you got a funny laugh? I remember way back years ago, about 22 years ago, we were starting on a different radio station and the first competition we did was actually a search for Ireland's funniest laugh. And I think 10 people won or 20 people won and we brought them to New York. and we hung out. I know, you couldn't make it up. So I hung out with the people with the funniest laughs for 5 days. That was 22 years ago, yeah. I see that the Pope has met with Tim Cook. Tim Cook is the chief man, the head man, the CEO of Apple. And I wonder what sort of chat went on there. They never reveal the chat between the Pope and his visitors. The Pope is 85. And he's been vocal in the past in criticising, you know, technology, in particular mobile phones. Back in 2019, he said, "Free yourself from the addiction to mobile phones. When you become a slave to your mobile phone, you lose your freedom." And he was addressing young people on that. And he's been critical of people who bring mobile phones into mass. So I wonder what he said to Tim Cook. And of course, all of these people, Tim Cook or Bezos or Elon Musk, or all these people who are heads of big tech companies, their main aim is to make more money, isn't it? You know, so anything that will interfere or hinder them in making a bigger profit, they're not going to really listen to. So we and the Pope and anybody else can say, "You're doing terrible harm to the young people. We don't know the long-term effects of the technology. They're addicted." They go, yeah, right. And they go, ka-ching, 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 another billion in the bank, another billion in the bank. So I don't know how you get through to them. And it's a global crisis. And people are going, and I had this conversation over the weekend with somebody. They were going, sure, it's the same as television. People were giving out about television. It's not the same as television. Mobile phones are not the same as television back in the 50s and 60s. Completely different. This is a seismic shift in how we live our lives. And unless people, governments in particular, unite and wake up to the problems that we're making for ourselves as a race with the technology, we're all pretty much effed. That's what I think. And maybe I'm being overly dramatic. What do you think? 515-51-RED-RTE.ie. This is brilliant. It's spider season. I don't know if you have it in your house, but regularly now it's, Daddy, quick, And you think that the house is on fire or something like that, and you run in and go, spider, spider, spider. And you have to remove the thing, and it's only a tiny little yoke. And it's doing nobody any harm, and it's minding its own business, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this happened to Pete Robinson. He was minding his own business, and next thing he hears a roar and a scream, and he goes into his daughter's room, and there it is, the spider. Big yolk on the windowsill. And even Pete's a little bit taken aback by the proportion of this thing that he's faced with. So he goes out and gets a glass, and he captures it there, and he walks away from it wondering what he'll do next. Meanwhile, his daughter returns to the room to see the glass on the windowsill and the thing. And she goes over and examines it more closely. It ain't a spider. It's a false eyelash. It's a false eyelash. So that's another thing, the affliction of the false eyelashes. Where's that going to stop? Like, you know, I could actually get false eyelashes and use them as a comb over. Sort of a toupee cum eyelashes. Some of them are so long now these days. So I'm not surprised that Pete mistook his daughter's false eyelashes for a spider. That's great. 515-51-RED-RTE.ie. I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment. But first, what are you saying on text? I've been avoiding ironing all my life, says Princeus in Castletown Bear. I'm 70 in 2 days, and at last the fashion world is catching up with me. So there you go, Princeus. I said to my daughter when I was visiting her 10 years ago, "Will I do some ironing?" And her response was, "Ma'am, I never iron." I wasn't impressed. "I love ironing," says Kath. And Lucy Kennedy has the most infectious laugh. "So funny. Always makes me smile," says Una. Well, are all laughs funny? I think all laughs are funny. Now, what do we go over? Yesterday we had Stephen in from Golden Disc, and we were talking about albums and people's favourite albums from over the last six decades. And one album that got mentioned in dispatches was White Ladder by David Gray, which Stephen told us was the best-selling album of all time in Ireland. So we said, sure, why not? If it was mentioned yesterday, why don't you play something from it? 51551, ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon.
Standing at the door of the pink flamingo, crying in the rain. It was a kind of so, so love, and I'm gonna make sure it doesn't happen again.
UK single edit for musos out there. The album track goes on for about 8 minutes, I think. That's David Gray's version of the Soft Cell song, Say Hello, Wave Goodbye. And that song, just for musos out there, was on Nonstop Erotic Cabaret, which was the Soft Cell album, which Connor Pope mentioned as one of the first albums he bought yesterday. So it's all connected. 51551RedRT.ie. Thanks, Ray. You could have announced that an hour and a half ago. We just finished a massive pile of ironing in the company of Joe Duffy. That's Rosemary. They're done now, Rosemary. They're done. What else on ironing? I would like to say that it's lovely to see someone dressed appropriately with ironed clothing. It's a sign that they take care of themselves. Shirts look much better when ironed, says Myra. Myra, I've done this a number of times. I haven't purchased yet, but iron-free shirts. I put that into Mr. Google to see what comes up. And Marks and Spencer's do a great range of iron-free shirts. I've never tried them, but you know, I might just try one, seeing as we're talking about it. If you ever take a stroll through the Phoenix Park on a winter's evening, you'll hear the gibbons calling from the zoo, and it sounds just like that laughing you just played, Ray. The other thing you'll notice if you take a walk through Phoenix Park on a winter's evening is the lovely gas lamps. And there's a wonderful piece by Dominic Farrell in the Irish Times today about the lamplighters. Two in particular, Jim Flanagan, age 78, and his brother. Where is his brother there? It says his name there somewhere. Who's 91. Jim and Frank, yes. So it's Jim and Frank Flanagan, 78 and 91. And they're from a long line of lamplighters. Their great-grandfather, Nicholas Flanagan, and his four brothers began working as lamplighters in the Phoenix Park in 1890. So it's been in the family for 132 years. And Frank was telling Dominic Farrell in the Irish Times, we have a time change every 14 days, so we have to wind the clocks and set them to a different time depending on whether it's summer or winter. That's in each lamp. It takes five people 3 days to service all the park's gas lamps, including setting the clocks. And luckily, Jim and Frank have helped their grandsons, Matthew Flanagan and Connor Clark, along with Jim's son-in-law, Ronan Clark, and Frank's son-in-law, John Kelly, work part-time as lamplighters as well. So the tradition is continuing in the family. And they say that it's a different type of light than electric light. It's lower. It doesn't cause as much light pollution, which is great for the deer and other wild animals in the park. But it's a lovely, lovely article there. And there's a picture of Frank up a ladder servicing a lamp at the age of 78. That's nice. On phones, I hate kids having mobile phones. My 11-year-old is torturing me looking for one, but I will 100% stick to my guns. Her friends come over on play dates and sit in the corner on their phones. It makes my heart sad, says Marie. Well, stick to your guns as long as you can, because once they have it, there's no going back. You know, once the genie's out of the bottle. And I'm sure there are parents listening now who regret getting mobile phones for their children at whatever age. People have been saying that Rebecca Vardy can pay the bill herself. Yes, she can. She's worth 3 million. So it'd be half what she's worth. And herself and her husband together, anyway, they'd be able to pay it. Or she can do it on her own or whatever they decide. Right. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer 3 questions each for our Reeling in the Ears quiz. Questions on songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we have a prize, a lovely prize from the people in Photo Island Resort. It's a 2-night stay for two people and dinner in the Amber Lounge on an evening of your choice. And there's loads of things to do down there. Walking trails, indoor swimming pool, world-class Photo Island Spa, exclusive Cove restaurant. There's a golf course. Of course, there's the Photo Wildlife Park, Photo House and Gardens. And then you can pop into Cork City if you want, the English Market. There's Ballymaloe's wonderful garden and shops nearby, Middleton, Ballycotton, Cliffwalk. Loads of things to do. PhotoIsland.ie for more information. PhotoIsland.ie for more information. Here's your qualifying question on this Tuesday. Which spooky holiday will we celebrate at the end of this month? Halloween or Easter? They're getting more difficult. Which spooky holiday will we celebrate at the end of this month? Halloween or Easter? 0818715925. That's 0818715925. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, back in August, Catherine spoke to John Hayes on the show. John is a chainsaw sculptor. And he and his team were responsible for an amazing work just off the Greenway down in Waterford called Eru. A terrible thing happened over the weekend. Well, actually, Thursday night into Friday morning, somebody set fire to Eru. And John is on the line to tell us about it. How are you doing, John?
Hey, Ray. How are you doing?
Yeah, sorry about this. This is terrible.
Yeah.
So just remind people about you. You carve big, huge things out of wood. So give us the dimensions of Eru then.
Eru, I suppose to give you a little backstory on it, it's a biodiversity project in connection with the University in Waterford and Waterford City County. And we came up with a plan to create like this area that we need to sit in and relax in and kind of just get involved with nature again. And they have apps to scan how many butterflies the kids become mini. So it was a real exciting project and still is. But she was the centrepiece of it. And she was about 30 feet long. She weighed about probably 5.5 tonnes.
Yeah.
And she was made from kind of resalvaged timber of trees that had fallen, and we had a big root ball for our hair and everything. So it was designed by myself and my good friend Chris Wood, who's like does the world championships with me, and we tour the world together. And he's one of the very best in the world, and head of Compton from the England as well, who's probably the best finisher of wood in the world.
Right.
Came over and to work on it with us. So I was kind of, I suppose the big devastation was because of and Yvonne and everyone in in the Waterford University put so much into
it. So how many man hours are we talking, John, went into it?
I suppose overall, if you were to tie all the things together when we were travelling, and then we'd come back and we'd work on the project a bit again, probably 4 months.
Right, okay.
If you were to just line up day after day. But
And Eru is sort of the goddess of Ireland. And
she is.
She gave
her name to Ireland.
Yes, yeah, Eru. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, 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 and she was gorgeous. I suppose that's all it is at the moment for me, is just that we...
And
just
so,
wait to sit. Go ahead.
Go on. So it was... Was it finished?
Yeah. Right. Unfortunately, we didn't get to unveil it.
It was gone
before we got to do that. And I suppose that's what I'm... The last time I was on the show, you know, you're celebrating being down in West Cork with the lads in the school there, and they get, you know, get a bit of enjoyment. And I suppose that's why we make these things, because... you're trying to. I watch people's faces when they go and take a photo, and then I get sent pictures of a kid that took it out when they were one and when they were two, and you can see you can kind of use it.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's what any of us like about what we do. And for the lads, Chris and Heather, you know, they're such amazing people in a sense. And Yvonne, I just felt I was just gutted across the board, to be honest. I don't understand this, but. The only thing I can say is I've spoke to the council and I've spoke to the lads in the university, and we're going to sit down and try, you know, come up with a plan and just figure it out, because you can't make sense of it, really.
What's going through these people's heads? So it was, it didn't happen by accident, obviously. It was malicious. So somebody thought it'd be a good idea, probably a bit of crack, to set fire to a wooden sculpture that people had worked for 4 months on, and that was going to bring huge amount of enjoyment into people's lives. So somebody decided that was a good idea. Like, what's going on in their heads, John?
I can't say, to be honest. Yeah. I'm not an expert in that. I think, you know, you can look at these things, and all I know is my job is, when I figured out what it was to kind of make things that kind of made people happy, and it's other people's jobs to kind of finance them or whatever.
Yes,
you know,
But
I do remember being a kid myself and kind of doing silly things, but I just don't know about the type of this. I just can't get my head around it.
Yeah.
I think in the years to come, people often reflect on things they maybe have done and things. But the only thing I can say is I just want to say, first off, thanks to everybody. Sorry. I just want to thank everybody for all their support. And look, there's a brilliant team here. And the council there's a good bunch of lads in there. And we get it done.
it's tough, John. And I know that your view of the world changed a couple of years ago when you lost your dad. And I suppose...
Oh, completely. Yeah.
So you have a more philosophical outlook on things like this.
It's kind of puts things into perspective, and that's all I can say to people. I know, you know, people get angry about these things, but think of all the good things that people are doing in your town, and Waterford is flying. And
yeah.
it was just, that's what's probably killing me most, is there's so many people doing so many good things, and I don't want that to be the thing.
We
don't want
to
celebrate the destruction, we're celebrating the thing. And when I think about that now, like, I stood in my sitting room with my dad on Christmas Day, and so he disappeared in front of me, and he gave me a gift that day. To go out and try make the most of the day, you know, and be positive. So, Jesus, why did you do this?
Sorry. Your dad, did he say something to you, or was it?
Christmas Day, we were having a great day. My dad was a really good singer, you know, and we're sitting down, we're chatting about things. We finished the Christmas dinner, and then he had a heart attack in front of him. We tried to save him, and it goes. And when you fight something like that on a day like that, it changed me completely. So now my thing is, you tell someone you love them, you do what you can. If you're able to do it, you do the best you can. And I went into this world, I suppose, after that, with the thing of, go make them, John, you know.
Yeah.
Get your friends to come from all around the world and make the stuff, and live people that you live with and enjoy it and have good lives, because it's tough. It's a tough world, and she's just a thing, but it's probably what she represents in what we all strive to be.
Yeah.
Is we want to have a place to sit down and relax and just say, how are you doing?
Yeah, well, look, you're a fighter. Eru was a fighter, so you know she was.
I feel like a bit of an angel.
Quite the opposite, John. Quite the opposite. No, this is important stuff. So do you think you'll get funding to do it again?
I don't really. I'm not even thinking. I know the lads in the sense of.
You don't want to put them on the spot. Fair enough. Yes, no, that's fair enough.
I suppose really, if I could just clarify that, what I want is just to give the lads a chance.
Yeah.
To be able to see what they want done, but I can, like, my heart will make that thing 50 more times. That's not, like, for me. It's a case of to just keep doing it. You can't stop. So that's my personal.
And John, as well. Like, whoever did that, you know, you don't know what's going on in their lives either. I know that's not an excuse for everything that goes on in the world.
It is a huge thing, yeah. You know, and people are under pressure. And it's easy for me to you know. But look, I'm not feeling sorry. I just don't like the idea of people being in that much pain. Really, that's the thing about it. So to me, I remember going on Joe Duffy a few years back about the one in Dublin, and, you know, again, you don't know what's going on at the back of that. And so for me, look, I still have my hands, I still have my friends, I still have the council and the university behind me.
You have your chainsaw, and you have your aptly named friend Chris Wood. So all's good in the world.
It is good, right? But can I just say thanks to everybody for all the things? And look, we keep going, forward, okay. And we'll have a better day the next day.
Yeah, sure. Like, the next time I'm on the Greenway, maybe there'll be something else there. If it's not Eru, it might be something else. Wooden iteration. Okay, John, mind yourself.
Thank you so much.
See you now. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Breed has been on. He says, I'm so angry that someone intentionally burned that man's art that he produced for the enjoyment of others. I'm so sorry to hear. And when his dad's passing, RIP, you sound like a gentleman. The very best luck to you from across, says Breed. And Richard says, to hear John Hayes crying is so sad. His beautiful sculpture is destroyed. And of course, the people who destroyed it aren't listening to RT Radio 1. And I don't know if hearing John's love for what he does and his sort of mission statement to himself to bring enjoyment into people's lives would change their behaviour. Maybe it would. I don't know. Now, we've spoken to James Crombie on a few occasions in the past about photographs of murmurations, hurlers on hills, and All-Ireland winning footballers with their parents. And all of those pictures contributed to his portfolio, which earned him the title of Press Photographer of the Year. Well, last night, the red carpet was rolled out for James's first ever exhibition in Tullamore Library. The exhibition is made up of 46 black and white portraits of members of Offaly's Down Syndrome Association, including James's six-year-old daughter, Chloe. And James joins us now from our Galway studio. How are you doing, James?
Not bad, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you again. So how did last night go?
Oh, it was amazing. We had about 250 people in for the exhibition unveiling. It was a very emotional evening for everyone, and yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah, you call it 321 exhibition. Just explain that for us.
Yes, so I had to write this down because I keep mixing it up. But the medical term for Down syndrome is trisomy 21. Uh-huh. So it's people with Down syndrome of a third copy of the 21st chromosome. So that's where it comes from, 321, and that's why World Down Syndrome Day is the 3rd of March, 321. So that's the link in that.
Right, and this month is World Awareness Month.
Yeah, World Down Syndrome Awareness Month. So yeah, it was just the perfect month to be able to get this exhibition out there.
Yeah. So it's 46 black and white portraits of people with Down syndrome. And the range in age is from
14 months to 55, I think.
Okay. And in there is your 6-year-old Chloe.
Yes.
Is she 6 or 7?
She's 6. She'll be 7 soon, but she's right. 6 at the minute. The kids keep changing their ages.
For the crack, is it?
I know, it's confusing.
Because you're 4 girls.
I've 4 girls, yeah, yeah, 4.
And Chloe is 2nd from the bottom.
Yeah, yeah, all in primary school at the moment. So right. We have a busy house every morning. My wife has run off the feet. I'm not much use, but yeah, Chloe's in senior infants.
And how did she get on last night?
She had a great time. Yeah, she was running around. She was dressed as... she had her denim jacket on and was dressed as Anna underneath from Frozen. So yes. She was going around freezing people. So she was having great fun.
Right, okay. And how did, particularly the children, how did they react to seeing themselves? Because the pictures are quite big. They're about 2 foot by 2 foot, are they? Or?
Yeah, they're 40, I think it's 20 inches by 20 inches.
So right,
they're relatively life size. There was just seeing kids hugging their picture and kissing their picture and getting their picture with their picture. And yeah. It was brilliant. It was really heartwarming last night. There was some lovely scenes in there, and it was just nice to be able to do it for them.
And what do you think something like this achieves, James?
Look, it's awareness and inclusion is what the idea of this. It wasn't fundraising. We weren't looking for money. We were just trying to open people's eyes. They'll be visible to everyone in the public for the next month. And it's just basically getting it out there. Like, you know what I mean? Employment is important. You know, access to school and needs in schools is important. So just making sure it's just as visible as possible.
And that's, I suppose, a thing when you talk to parents of children with Down syndrome. It's the future that yeah. always comes up, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember when Chloe was born, man. It was just trying to, like, I was already zooming ahead to 30 years' time when I mightn't be around or my wife mightn't be around. And that was the big worry, like, you know what I mean? What's going to happen then? But everyone told me to live in the moment and forget about that. But yeah, look, those people in that community want to work and they want to go to school and they want to have friends. And there's massive changes and improvements in the last years, but that's what we're really trying to push and make sure that happens, you know?
And did you know that Chloe was going to be born with Down syndrome?
No, we found out about 20 minutes after she was born. So it was a bit of a... It was a roller coaster day, I remember. Just not something that you were really prepared for, but but my wife was so unbelievable, and then she went back to sleep because she had a section, so she was fairly knocked out. But it was an emotional day. I remember going home to my parents' house and crying, actually, and I don't think I've done that in 30 years. But you know, look, our heart's been opened up to all that community since then, and meeting adults, and we go for coffee with some of the adults during the week sometimes, and it's just really, it's really reassuring, you know.
And Chloe is in a small enough school, Ballinagara National School.
Yeah, I think there's about 190 kids in the school, so it's not too small, but like the school I went to school was, the school I went to, there was 34 children, but to me that's a massive school, 190. It's a really nice school, and they've been really, you know, encouraging, and they have a sensory room there, and there's some great facilities, and the SNAs work with them, and the teachers work with us, and it's brilliant. Can't fault them at all.
And what about other things, you know, like speech therapy and all that? How are those services?
Yeah, look, we through Offie Down syndrome, we've managed to hire someone, and we fund that privately. You know, it's needed more on the national level. Everyone, like, speech is so important. That's what's going to make inclusion and everything, you know, and you know, so much more achievable. So, yeah, the country needs as many speech and language therapists as possible, and make sure those services are available regularly to people.
Now, there was a bit of argy-bargy between yourself and your wife, Anne, because mm-hmm. the picture, and you probably took, you know, I don't know, 50 to 100 pictures of each of your subjects. Yeah. But the picture you chose of Chloe, she's not smiling in.
Yeah. I got in trouble for that. Yeah. I think it just sums her up perfectly. She's a really smiley kid, but I know her way more than all the other people in the exhibition. And to me, that just was the perfect reflection.
That was her. Yeah.
But she's real smiley and jokey and laughy. But just for some reason, that was just the picture I chose. And I stood my ground and I got another one printed and I went back to it. I got the smiley one printed and I just said, no, I'm going back to the other one. So I'm happy I stuck with that as well. Yeah. So there was a couple of other people in the exhibition not smiling as well. And I said, I might get in trouble if my daughter's smiling.
Oh, yeah, preferential treatment.
Yeah.
Tell us about Tig Murphy. Because if people, the picture that's in the paper today is Chloe holding her picture and Tig holding his picture. And his picture is just, it's one in a million, that one.
It's brilliant. It's my favourite picture from the whole exhibition. I remember he just done that and he came in with such energy into the room, couldn't stop laughing, wouldn't take it seriously. And it was just a split second where he just closed his eyes and he was laughing at me and just to capture it. And then we went over last week to kind of to get the two of them together for a picture, and chaos ensued.
Yeah, because just for people who haven't seen it, so Tig is about what, 11, 12, is he?
I think he's actually, he's in primary school.
He's so in primary school, right, But he he's smiling so much that his eyes are closed. And with the result, there's a line through his two eyes and across his nose. It's a fantastic photograph.
Yeah, just check that he's eight.
He's
in primary school, and his teachers have got in touch with me and his mother and his family, and they've all said that's him perfectly summed up in one picture, and that's what you're trying to achieve with a portrait or a photograph. And if you'd done nothing else, it was just to sum someone up in a picture, and that's what I think we got with Tig. So
but just on a personal thing, because it's your first exhibition and it's different to what you normally do, because you're normally at All-Ireland finals or out doing murmurations of starlings or on a hill, you know, taking a picture of a hurler. So how has the whole thing been for you?
It was like, since I joined Offey Down Syndrome, since we got involved there, the guys have been saying, oh, you've got to do some, a calendar or something. And I didn't really want to do a calendar. I kind of wanted to do something a bit, because with a calendar, we would be limited to 12 people. Mm. And the whole idea, I thought we might get 20, 25 people involved in this. I think we got all bar maybe a couple of people in Offaly. We're not in the organisation, or we couldn't get in touch with, but we tried to reach out to everyone, just the whole demographic from Offaly, to try to get as many people involved.
So, but
the minute the balls got in motion, of a guy called Robbie Donnelly, he's the chairman of Offaly Down Syndrome, and he used to work with Radio 3. He's a real presenter's voice. He outshone me last night in the speeches. Robbie done all the looking for funding and speaking to sponsors and getting the hotel sorted out and doing schedules for everyone. So it was brilliant to have someone with that kind of ability,
because
that's not my strength. My strength is taking pictures, not exactly.
Well, you do it very well, James Crombie. Well, you do it very well. And so it's open today in Tullamore Library until October 7th.
It's extended to the 11th now today. 11th. I was in there this morning, so it's great. Yeah.
Okay, and then runs in locations throughout the county during October. And it's 3:21. To celebrate World Down Syndrome Awareness Month, and it's just from the pictures I've seen, and there's a lovely little video up on the RT website as well if people want to go and have a look at that. It's heartwarming. Great talking to you, James. Back to whatever you were doing in Galway. Thanks for taking
Absolute
time
pleasure.
Out. Thanks.
Cheers, Ray.
See you now. Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 551. Now, just on mobile phones, you're spot on. The new technology can't be compared to TV. Many people are totally disconnected from the real world almost all the time now. I see them walking along, heads down, scrolling on their phones and headphones blocking out the sounds around them, so they're living in an alternative two-dimensional world. Their powers of observation are totally gone. If this continues, I reckon the human race will evolve into creatures whose necks are fused permanently in a bent position and whose fingers and thumbs have become gigantic. Not a pleasant thought, says that person. Couldn't agree more. About technology, meditation didn't used to be trendy because we used to live our lives with pauses, naturally built into our days, when we could clear our minds to focus on a thought. Now people don't even go to the bathroom without their phone and never give their minds time off. Not to mention young children who are staring at screens before they've even learned reality from non-reality. Telly was communal and not portable. A completely different thing. I'm beyond concerned about where this is taking us as a race. Whew, yeah. Ironing. Ironed a shirt for hubby, needed urgently. He took it promptly, put a jumper on over it. Why did I bother? It was difficult material to iron. Could have just done the collar. You see, Bernadette, if you have to ask, are you going to wear a jumper? Are you going to put a sweater over that? Why do you ask? Well, it matters. I'll just do the collar and the top bit. And then if you're wearing a tie with it, it doesn't even matter. I'll just do the collar. My granddaughter Ruby, aged 8, is a great reader and will sometimes ask the meaning of words she comes across. Recently, she asked me, what does an iron do? From Olive. Right, there you go. And on John, the burned carved piece should be left in situ, a monument to ignorance. Also, the longer it stays in place, the more it will be talked about, the greater the possibility of finding the perpetrators, says Raymond. Now, in other news today, after, well, it came out yesterday, after 86 years, the famous Quality Street chocolates are going to axe their iconic brightly coloured plastic wrappers in favour of new waxed paper. All, of course, in the name of being more environmentally friendly. Joining me now to tell us about this historic change is chocolate historian Alex Hutchinson, who used to be the official archivist at Roundtree or Roundtree Macintosh. Hello, Alex.
Hello, hello. I'm so delighted to be on your show.
Great. Hello. I'm so delighted to be on your show. It has a nice ring to it, Alex. Alex, of course, my intro is sort of factually incorrect because this is new. It's actually going back to days gone by, in a way.
Yes, indeed. So I know a lot of people are very upset to see the end of the cellulose wrappers. They're being replaced entirely with wax paper, brightly coloured wax paper. So you'll still be able to see the sweets. You'll still be able to dodge the ones you don't like. You'll still be able to avoid the blue coconut eclairs and go for the purple ones. But the wax wraps were in the original assortment in 1936. Harold McIntosh had wax wraps in the first Quality Street. So it's going back to its roots, and for good reason.
Before we get to the wax paper in more detail, just give us the history of Quality Street. So it dates back to 1936, you say?
Yes, McIntoshes of Halifax, founded in 1890 in West Yorkshire, created the first chewy toffee. And they were so, so successful. By the 1920s, they were making 2 billion sweets a year. And they decided to launch Quality Street as a more affordable alternative to a box of chocolates, because it was a mix of toffees and chocolate. And toffees were a bit more affordable, and they're made of different ingredients. And it was a huge, huge success, an international success. And it's still going strong and still being made in exactly the same place to this day.
And Mr. McIntosh, Harold McIntosh, he had a vision, didn't he, for how they should look?
Oh, yes. So there was he wrote a memo and then drew some sketches of precisely what he wanted. He wanted a mix of different colours, different shapes, different types of wrapper. So some of the sweets were foil wrapped and are still going to be foil wrapped even after this change. Some of them were in wax papers. There was paper bunting, brightly coloured paper bunting around the inside of the tin. He wanted this to be an explosion of a colour and a feast for the senses.
Yeah. So he must have been a lovely man, because he wanted to bring joy into people's lives, didn't he? Because back then, the 1936, you know, Europe was heading towards the Second World War. Things weren't great. So to get a box of Quality Street into the house, like, that was, wow, it must have been brilliant.
He was a lovely man. He was a public servant as well. He did all sorts of things to try to help other people, and was eventually put into the House of Lords. He was Viscount McIntosh by the time he died. Yeah, now, he was a great man.
Now, we've dealt with a lot of confectionery controversies over the years, and it usually happens around this time of the year. You know, so they make an announcement. This year it's quite big. It's about the wax papers. But in previous years, they've ditched certain ones and introduced new ones and all that sort of thing. Can you talk us through some of those? Was the toffee upgraded at one stage?
There was, well, so every year around about September, there's a Quality Street scandal that hits the newspaper. And sometimes it's just a rumour that somebody thinks there might be a change, but there isn't one really.
Right.
2016 was the big shocker because there was a suite in it which hadn't been as popular and wasn't as fancy. And it was withdrawn and replaced with a much fancier, much more expensive suite. And consumers were horrified that they were being treated with all this luxury.
What was the name of that suite? Can you remember?
So the Toffee Deluxe was replaced with the Honeycomb Crunch.
Ah.
And which was quick. Everything was put back to normal after a while because there was such outcry. I said, sorry. We'll put it back where it was. Yeah.
Now you are a chocolate historian, which is it sounds like an amazing job, Alex. Is it an amazing job?
It is. Yeah.
So you know better than most about the changing flavors over the years, and people would say, and maybe it's that sort of hankering for the old days. They don't taste like the old days. So you know factually, has the flavour, have the ingredients of Quality Street changed over the years?
Well, yes. I mean, we've lost the gooseberry cream.
Right.
And I'm campaigning for its return.
Right.
I want the gooseberry cream and the apricot surprise. But there are four and five sweets in the assortment now that were in that original assortment in 1936.
Right.
And those are the core favourites. But yes, the flavours do change depending on consumer tastes.
Yes.
And of course,
changing manufacturing processes will result in different nuances of flavour as well. What about shrinkflation? Because that's another controversy there, that they're saying that we're paying the same price for a smaller box.
I think that Quality Street, really, when you look at the prices from the 1980s, I think it's inflation beating.
Right.
I think that for cost, it's doing quite well. It's punching above its weight.
And final question for you, chocolate historian Alex Hutchinson. What's your favourite Quality Street sweet?
Got to be the Strawberry Delight, I think. Yeah, I love a Strawberry Delight.
You're going for the flavoured ones, yeah. I'm sort of a chocolate, you know, the caramel covered in chocolate one, whatever that's called. You probably have the official name for it. That's mine.
But caramel swell.
What it's called? Caramel swell. Even the name, that's caramel swell.
Yeah.
Luckily, caramel we all swell. Don't like the same ones, or it'd be madness at Christmas, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would, yes.
Precisely. That's the brilliance of Quality Street.
All-inclusive Quality Street. Alex Hutchinson, thank you very much. Thank you. Mind yourself. Bye. I'm a bit allergic to literal links between songs and items, but there you go. It happened today. It happened today. I'm breaking out in a rash here. Feeling a bit nauseous. Sweets for my sweets. Can you ask her whether the coffee roses will ever make a comeback? They're dearly missed in our house. Are roses, they're not Macintosh today. Cadbury's, you see, I didn't want to offend her by asking her about her competitors. I know she doesn't work for Macintosh anymore, but you know, people are loyal. I remember being amazed going to my neighbours when I was small to see that they all loved the hard sweets and left the soft flavoured ones in the tin. I thought it was Christmas all over again. So we instituted a swap every year. Good idea. On phones, we signed a pact in our school WhatsApp group not to get any of the children in the class a phone. It's like a house of cards. Once one gets one, they all want one. If no one has one, then they won't fall so quickly to peer pressure. And we spoke to that school in Blennerville. Was it last year or the year before? And again, all the parents have to agree around rules about mobile phones. I can't remember the exact details of it, but it was a school effort. And it has to be that way because you can't have children coming home saying, little Johnny has one, why can't I have one? Because we know the power of pester power, don't we? Yes, we do. Now, the money doctor, John Lowe, is going to be with us after 4 o'clock. And John has done a brilliant thing. He has sent a chapter of his book out to all transition year students in the country. 48,000. Why, you ask? Well, because his 19-year-old son asked him what an overdraft was. And he was shocked and horrified It's like, you know, a cobbler's shoes and a carpenter's cabinets. And there was the man who calls himself the money doctor, and his son, who was a young adult, didn't know what an overdraft was. Anyway, John is coming into us after 4 o'clock, and we're going to be talking specifically about teaching our teenagers about money. So if you have any comments for John, any questions about how you should inform your teenage children about money and the value thereof, I'm fascinated to know how much, what's the average pocket money now for a teenager, and what age can they work at, and should you encourage them to work? All those questions. John will be dealing with all of those. He's the money doctor after 4 o'clock. So get them into us, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Anish, Gurmagan, Marion, thank you very much. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Yeah, John Lowe will be here in about 20 minutes' time. So any questions or comments for him, get them into us now. 51551, ray@rte.ie. I said that already. Press the button. Yeah, there you go. Okay, we have two quizzers standing by, and we have a prize. And this week, it's a two-night stay for two people at Fota Island Resort. Breakfast each morning and dinner in the Amber Lounge on an evening of your choice. Loads of things to do down there. They've walking trails, indoor swimming pool, world-class Fota Island spa. They have a golf course. There's Fota Wildlife Park, Fota House and Gardens. And then you're very close to Cork City, you're very close to East Cork, which has loads there, Ballycotton and Middleton and all that. Fotaisland.ie, Fotaisland.ie. Susan Mann, hello.
Hello.
And it is Susan and not Suzanne.
It's Suzanne. But
oh, it is
okay.
Suzanne. Oh, no, no, no.
No, you're all right.
No, but it's your name. It's important that we get it right.
Okay.
And do you spell it with a Z?
I do, Ray, yeah, with a Z.
Okay, Suzanne, right. That's Suzanne. We have that there. And you're on your way home from work, Suzanne.
Yeah, I just finished a bus run, so I'm waiting to go home now.
Okay, a bus run where? For who?
Oh, I work in St. Peter's in Rackar, and Dave's my bus driver, and we have just dropped off a few kids, being Connor, Pierce, Carl, Reuben, Ryan and Blake. That's all that was with us today now.
Okay, okay. And you're an SNA, so you escort them home?
I do, yes. Yeah.
I think an SNA, I think it's a very rewarding job. I don't know, I haven't done it, but is it?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. How rewarding. I love it.
Yeah. How long have you been doing it?
I'm only doing it 3 years full-time. Prior to that, I was working in a totally different industry, hair and beauty.
Right. That's a big change, isn't it?
It's a huge change, but well worth it.
And why, Suzanne?
I always wanted to work with kids, to be honest, but I was working for a family at the time, so I made the decision then, as my own two got older, to transfer over into this industry, yeah.
Right. And do you still do the odd head of hair? Or?
More on the beautician side.
More on the beautician side,
yeah.
So you still do the odd
friends,
set of nails or makeup for a wedding or something like that you might do.
No, you have it, yeah.
So who, you've a son and a daughter?
I do, yeah.
You're not going to name them, or will
I? Finley is my son, he's 16, and Elise is my daughter, she's 15.
Right, okay. And are you on dinner duty tonight?
I am indeed, every night on dinner duty.
Right, okay. What's on the menu tonight?
I'm making a chicken stir fry. Just throw everything into the pan and a few flavours and garlic and off you go.
Quick and healthy. Quick and healthy. Yeah, ideal. You're up against Jimmy Power from Mallon, County Cork. How are you doing, Jimmy?
Hello, Ray. How are you doing?
Good. So you're on your way back from Newbridge?
That's correct, yeah. On the way back down there, and I just pulled off on the exit there for Cashel.
Right, okay, so you're safe there. What do you deliver?
We collect samples from factories and meat, water, cheese, anything like that, and it goes up to the lab in Newbridge to be tested.
Aha.
Shelf life and all that kind of stuff.
Right, okay, right. How many miles would you do in a week, an average week, Jimmy?
I'd say today now I might have done about 450 kilometres maybe.
Right. You'll be tired when you get home.
Yeah, you get used to it already, you know. You get used to the driving, to be honest, you know.
Yeah, you're sort of match fit.
I suppose you'd want to be able to enjoy the driving, you know.
Yeah. Dara's at home. Your daughter.
Dara's on the way home from school shortly, I'd say. She's just finishing up there now. She's in second year.
Right, okay.
And she's going to Loretto in Sidon from Y.
Okay. So, and she's a musician?
She does a bit of concertina and she does a bit of the fiddle, or the violin, sorry. And now she's better at the concertina because I'd always be messing with her. I'd be telling her, like, when she plays the violin, it's like dragging a cat across a glass table.
Oh,
you know?
Right. that, words of encouragement.
Yeah.
From Jimmy.
But I think she's definitely better at the concertina. So yeah. She plays a bit of golf.
And are you musical?
I wouldn't be, no, just a good singer, all right, you know.
Right, okay. Right. So you can't play any instruments, and then you're slagging your daughter off. But anyway.
I know, yeah. I don't know right now, really, have I?
Yeah. And did you hear the good news today, Jimmy? Ironing's gone, creases are in.
Absolutely fantastic news.
It's great news.
It didn't kind of worry me before, because whatever kind of clothes I wear, they seem to just hold the crease and they never get wrinkled or anything like that.
Right, you obviously iron-free clothing. You can buy it. Obviously, whoever bought your clothes for you
bought
them.
Yeah, I'm going to have a look at that now.
Yeah,
see?
Yeah. Right, Suzanne and Jimmy, three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. If you go for a shorter clip, you get 2 points because they're more difficult. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's drawing points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Yeah, good luck, Suzanne.
Thanks, Jimmy. You too.
Right, Suzanne. The year is 1994.
Okay.
And we're starting on the television. Do you want to go long or short?
I'll go short, thank
short,
you.
Okay. This British sitcom starring Dawn French in a religious role aired its first episode in 1994. Can you name it?
The Vicar of...
No, surely not.
I was playing you a clip, but you're right. The Vicar of Dibley is correct. Yeah, you get 2 points for that. Yeah, that's the way we do. We play a clip and then you answer the question. But anyway, it doesn't matter. You get 2 points. That's the important thing. Yeah, well done. Jimmy, television from 1994. Do you want a long clip or a short clip?
I go short, right?
Short, okay. So I will be playing a clip, Jimmy, just for your information. This medical drama television series created by Michael Crichton aired its first episode in 1994 and focused on the lives, loves and losses of the doctors and nurses of Chicago's County General Hospital. Can you name the TV show?
Your daughter's having a very serious asthma attack. Is she allergic to anything? Do you have any pets?
This cat, a stray.
Not sure, but I'm going to have a guess. Would it be ER?
Yes, because it could have been Grey's Anatomy. ER is the correct guess. 2 points there as well. That was the voice of George Clooney. Back to you, Suzanne. Yeah, it's music. Yeah. It's music this time.
Okay.
Do you want to go long or short from 1994?
Short.
Short, okay.
Short, please. Yeah.
This Europop classic went straight to the top of the UK charts in 1994, ending Wet Wet Wet's Love Is All Around 15-week run at number one. Uh-huh. Can you name the song or the singer?
It's party time, and not 1 minute we can lose. Be my baby.
Is it Whitfield?
It is Whitfield.
Saturday Night.
Yes. For an extra 2 points, can you do the dance? No, I'm joking. Yeah, well done. 2 points there. Now, Jimmy. Under pressure.
Short, I think. Really.
Short, okay. Yes, music from 1994. This song was released on 28th of March 1994, becoming this band's fourth consecutive single to go straight in at number one in the UK singles. So can you name them or the song? Here's your short clip.
We've said goodbye.
I haven't a clue, Terry.
Do you want to guess?
Duran, just off my head.
No. They were sort of... Take That. That was Take That.
Take That, okay.
Everything changes. Robbie Williams there on lead vocals. Right, now, this makes it interesting. Suzanne, if you get anything from the last question, you're today's winner.
Okay.
However, if you don't get anything from it, and then Jimmy goes short and gets it right, we're into a tie-break question. Okay. So what are you going to do? News and current affairs from 1994.
I'm going to go long.
You're going to go long. Okay.
Yeah.
In 1994, the Central Bank of Ireland issued a new note designed by Robert Balla. Catherine McAuley was chosen for the front of this note. What denomination was the note? And here is your long clip by way of a clue for 1 point. And if you get it right, you're today's winner. Good luck with this.
It bears the portrait of Sister Catherine McAuley. On the reverse is a picture of a classroom with three children, with the first verse of the poem Misereftere an Phila written on the blackboard. The note was launched today by the Governor of the Central Bank, Maurice Doyle, who praised the work of Sister Catherine and that of the order she founded.
But what denomination was that note?
Oh, I'm going to go with a fiver.
You're going to go with a fiver, because it could have been a tenner, it could have been 20.
I don't know, I know.
You're going to go with a fiver.
Yeah.
Is the correct answer. Well done. Yes.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, Jimmy, but thank
you. So, for your fiver, you get a point and it makes you today's winner. Sorry about that, Jimmy.
No bother. Congratulations,
yeah.
Suzanne.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thank you.
Yeah, lovely talking to you, Jimmy. Safe home. Drive safely.
You too, indeed. Thanks, Ray.
We're going to send you out a couple of Ray Darcy Show mugs. See you, Jimmy.
Really
bye now.
Bye,
bye,
Jimmy.
Bye, bye.
Bye, bye.
Suzanne, there you go.
Yes. Never one ending in my life.
Hey. I love when people say that. That's great. So you're off with a person of your choice to Photo Island, and you can go to photoisland.ie. There's loads of things to do down there. You'll have a ball.
I can't take the school with me right now.
No, unfortunately not. You can only pick one person. Okay. Right.
Thank you.
See you, Suzanne. Good luck with the Starfly. Okay, see you. Bye, 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 bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Listening there about the Quality Street brings back memories of travelling with my husband, who worked with Irish Shipping many years ago, and me having a sweet tooth would have box of Quality Street hidden in every drawer. Now, I presume this drawer was in a camper van or something. It took 4 weeks to travel from Europe to the west coast of the United States and Canada that time, so I needed my sweet fix. 2 weeks to Panama Canal, another 2 weeks to up to Vancouver. So there was Quality Street everywhere. Is there any more of that? No, there isn't. Yeah, that's all there. And at Christmas in our house, if you chose your favourite sweet, you had to take a crappy one as well. So you'd have to take the coffee one or the strawberry one, so they wouldn't be left. So it was a good one and a bad one. That's the way they used to go. You'd think by now they'd have sorted it out with AI and all that, that they'd know exactly which ones go down well and which ones don't. There should be none left in the tin, I would think.
Your cattle by Lover, what would I do? Will I fill in again? What did you do with the cow and a clover? What would I do? Will I settle again? The pigs, they're dog and the herons are roasting. Kitty lie over, close for the wall. You get to be drunk and me to be sober. Kitty lie over, close for the wall. If you married a soldier, what would I do? Will I follow his gun? What did you do if he died in the ocean? What would I do? Will I marry again? The phrases are dug and the herons are roasting. Kitty lie your hover close by the wall. How would you like to marry a soldier? Kitty lie your hover close by the wall.
That's the Mary Wallopers. Frost is all over, which is great, and it's out now. John Lowe, the Money Doctor, is giving every transition year student in Ireland his Money Advice book, The Money Doctor 2022. in the format of an e-book as a way to help students become more financially savvy. I have it in front of me here, and you definitely recognise it in the shops. It's the yellow one, and John joins us in studio with his yellow braces on. Your colour synchronised or whatever, colour coordinated. John, is this a true story now about your son?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. He was 19. This is a guy who never failed an exam in his life, went to Rock, went to B&L in UCT, did a master's in finance in Smurfit, chartered accountant, now in corporate finance. But when he was 19 and in UCT, he says, "Dad, what's an overdraft?" And it was that germ that actually said, there's something wrong with the system, that you can go through school, you can pass all these fantastic exams, get first class honours and all the rest of it, and you still don't know what the NTMA is or Dow Jones or what. Yeah. You know, basic stuff that goes over most kids' head. And so what I basically tried to do in this, there's a chapter in the book, basically just to explain some of the rudiments, you know, overdraft, opening accounts, yeah, simple things, better managing your money.
Okay, I'd say you've piqued a lot of parents' interest here, because I'd say it's a challenge. It's a challenge with teenagers to make them value money, because in a way, money has become invisible with Revolut.
Yes.
We were going that way, and then COVID speeded it up completely, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Revolut is a revolutionary in itself, by the way. They've done so well over here in Ireland in particular. But I think it's also the fact that, you know, when your seven-year-old kid, you bring them down to the post office or the credit union, you open up their first account, and then you go to the shops with them, and they're wondering, why are you putting money given to the girl at the end of this till, and what is that for? And then you're starting to realise, you know, that that's for goods that you've just bought. And then it starts to drop, the penny starts to drop, and then you realise that the money that I've got in that post office, that credit union, I can now use and buy things. I can buy my parents Christmas presents. Right. I can even go and see a local film that I want with my mates and things.
Okay,
like that.
So let's start at the beginning then. Mm-hmm. So would you recommend to parents that they open up an account for their children?
Oh, I think it's essential. Right. At the start, you know, I mean, seven is the age of reason. That same son, by the way, he was nine, and my older daughter was six, and he wanted to beat the living daylights out of my daughter for some misdemeanor she did at the time. Right. I said, Andrew, leave it till she's seven. That's the age of reason. Right, she reaches the age of reason, and then she can do what she likes after that.
So you reckon an account at seven?
At seven. Seven is the ideal age, really.
So what about pocket money?
Actually, it's interesting that, because the average pocket money, if you're in national school, you give your child 10 euros a week.
Right.
If you're secondary, it's 20 euros a week. And if you are third level, it's 60 euros a week. That's the average pocket money.
Is it?
Now, my three kids were in the three different years in the same year. It's three different sections. So it was 10, 17 and 20.
Oh, you see. Yes,
right.
Yes.
Anyway, so, but that's the average. So like as a primary national school goer, you're looking at 10 euros a week. I don't know what you give yours.
Yeah, it's fluid. it's fluid, yeah. The reason we haven't you in is because I need the answers to all these questions, you know. And what about this, and this is a more sort of vague question, it's about the value of things, you know.
Yeah.
And we would hope that we would release our children into the world knowing the value of things. It's a hugely important thing.
It's massive.
Yeah.
It's value is where it's at, because you can look at the expenditure of your budget plan, your little budget plan. And if you know that there's a shop down the road that you can get a can of Coke for 10 cents cheaper, and yet you still go to this other shop, you're not getting value and you feel cheated.
Yeah.
It was like, actually, I was at the Rolling Stone second time round, 2007,
right,
and that was in Slane. And we were the last to arrive, four of us, first to get out. And there's a little shop, one of these vans on the side. So we got some chips, we got some water, Coke, cola. There's no alcohol, no nothing there. And the lady next to me nudged me and she says, "I think that lady's done you out of a tenner," she said. to me. Oh, I said, really? So when she came back, I said, could you tot up that again, please? I think there's a tenor out. And I said, no, I didn't do that. It was you got the curry chips. Isn't that what you... And I said, look, could I see your manager, please? Now, I was dressed fairly smartly.
Yeah.
And here's about 30, 40 people outside this chip van. And here's this fella saying, can I see your manager, please? This fella comes over and he looks at me, says nothing, goes over to the till, presses the till, takes out a tenor, gives it to me, walks off. Now, that was the value for me, that it would have killed me stone dead, the idea that they got away with a tenor.
It's not
the money. The money doesn't matter.
It's the principle. Okay. So by giving your book to transition year students, they're at an age, 15, 16, where I think legally you can start working at 16.
That's right, you can.
There's another big question for parents.
Yeah.
Should you encourage your children to work?
Well, there is actually, once you're under 18, you can get up to €7.35 an hour. You can find an employer to give you that. So
the local supermarket, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it goes up 18, you're €8.40. And then at 19, you're €9.45 an hour.
Right.
That's the recommended. That's the, even though the minimum wage has gone up 80 cents since the last budget to 11.30, these will stay. So 7.35 if you're 17 or under.
Yeah.
So,
did your children work when they hit 16?
They did. They all worked, first of all, in the local pub in, actually, the Orchard, in Stillorgan. Most of them did. And also did a bit of coffee making in my office.
Barista, barista.
So it was good.
That's an industry now in Dublin. There are people running barista courses.
Yeah. That's right. That is right.
Yeah.
Interesting, though, about the TY students, though, we did huge research. I had a team who did 729 calls to those schools to make sure that all the stats were right, the emailed address. And then last Thursday, we posted codes, individual codes, to each of those schools so that the TY coordinator could write a letter, which we helped script, to the TY, rationalising the benefits of downloading this ebook. And the only problem is that some of those schools, it's in their spam or junk mail, so they haven't got it yet.
Right,
so this is really very helpful.
This is a free
helpful.
Book.
It's a free ebook.
You don't get much
absolutely.
For free these days.
Yeah.
And what are the takeaway things? What do you think, if you had a class of TY students in front of you now, they're 15, 16, what would you be saying to them?
I would say, this is not on your curriculum, and this is not to be forced to you to read it. This is to be encouraged. It's like you're being given a fork at the start of the summer in an orchard, and you're allowed to dig all whatever you want. By the end of it, if you've dug that orchard, you're going to have a bountiful harvest.
Yeah.
So the idea is that this is the kind of book that you can dip in and out of. Actually, Gay Byrne had a wonderful endorsement on it. Sadly, I had to take him off 2 years ago. But his endorsement was, this is a terrific book that you can dip in and out on, and written in a very user-friendly way.
Mm.
So it's easy to read. There's a special chapter in it for the TY students that was written by UCD's Dr. Rachel Farrell and James Doyle, who's a St. Andrew's College TY coordinator. So they've got a special chapter in that for the TY classes. And overall, it's the kind of book you download, put on your laptop, put it on your PC, and you refer to it. It's like a financial Bible.
Mm.
And the whole idea then is, you're not forced to do this. It's not like, oh, I've got to go in and do this. It's whenever somebody starts talking to you about... maybe overdrafts.
Yes,
you can look it up on the index.
You
can look up.
We got this in. I was looking after two nieces aged 6 and 8. See what you think of this. Firstly, I brought a bag of coins with me and I taught them how to count money. That was the first thing I did. Secondly, I gave each of them €20 in varying denominations and told them that was their allowance for the weekend. We went out for lunch on a Saturday and all of a sudden they're looking at the prices on the menu and decided they could share a sandwich and a portion of chips. Next thing, they could share a packet of crisps. After day one, they were counting out their money and deciding what they could have the following day.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. But we're becoming a cashless society, so it's going to get a bit more difficult. So, but the likes of, the Revoluts and the various other, some of the other...
And when you tell people who are sort of maybe haven't got into Revolut yet, the benefits of it for teenagers, if you have a teenager?
Well, there's lots of benefits aside from the actual, and I shy away from like cryptocurrency, which they have available, and also share dealing on their apps. But they have got sharing, like if you have four or five, you're going out for a meal, you can actually share it. Yes. Between the five, six of you. You can also, you know, transfer money instantly. You don't have to go through a bank. It's instant money, as long as you have a Revolut account yourself. And also for foreign currency, if you happen to go even to UK or to America, I mean, it's like there's a buy and sell rate when you buy a foreign currency. They give you the midway rate. You can't beat it.
Yeah. And the other thing is, which I suppose is one of the benefits over cash, whereas back in the day, they were coming to you and you're going, you know, kind of a fiver for this and a tenner for that, and you lose track. Whereas when you're dealing in Revolut, you have a record of everything you've given
absolutely,
them.
Absolutely. You can also do budgets. I mean, it's got lots of stuff on it. But it's you know, really you should be doing your own budget anyway. And you should also even be tracking what you're spending. You could either do a little money diary.
Yes.
You know,
never mind the teenagers. You'll be doing it yourself. Yeah. John Lowe's a great guy. Helped me get my first mortgage as my building society manager and sung with his band at my wedding in 1985. Very well. That's Carl Pratt.
Oh my God, that's Morris's brother.
Yeah, there you go.
And I remember that wedding.
Last in the past.
Thank you, Carl.
So if you're in transition year, look out for the free ebook, Money Doctors 2022, John Lowe. So 10 primary, 20 secondary, 60 in third level. That's the takeaway from today. John, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Great to
Thanks
see
very
you.
Much indeed.
That's
thank
it
you.
From us. Cormac is on the way with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.